This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
Good afternoon, evening, wherever you are, gearheads. We appreciate you tuning in. And wow, what a race. You know, all the complaints about Formula One not having exciting racing.
You must have watched that Indy race from the other day.
Throw all of that out the window, because that was an incredible race, man. We had everything. Tons of passing, crashes, despair, tears, you name it. Unbelievable, incredible Formula One race.
Awesome. Had everything, didn't it? I was about to say this is going to be a strategy. I said at the beginning, oh, this will be a strategy race.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, there was, but still, gosh, that was it was crazy. I mean, let's start at the top of the race, man. Turn one, from there, it was nonstop.
Yeah, right from the get-go. I mean, and amazingly, Ferrari got what they wanted in a weird way, because they got the 1-2, but with Vettel leading. And it wasn't long before we got Leclerc back in second place, and then it was what we expected, which was a Ferrari 1-2. But then it still changed, because Hamilton and Bottas were going at it. I mean, it was all going on, wasn't it?
Yeah, Vettel took the lead, because he had a great start, and then Bottas took second, and then Leclerc took second back, and then... And not long after that, he and Hamilton came together slightly. Grosjean and Stroll came together at the very beginning and put Grosjean out eventually after a few laps. And man, it was nonstop, I swear. And of course, the end of the race when Leclerc lost energy recovery. And man, that was just a shame. I thought
when it comes to harvesting, you reap what you sow. Unfortunately, he didn't reap anything.
You know, he did phenomenal. And I thought it was cool that Hamilton jumped in there at the end. Yeah. And called him out and congratulated on him. And I agree, Leclerc performed wonderfully today.
All right, well, let's give out the phone number if anybody wants to call and tell us what you thought of the race. 512-643-LIVE, 512-643-5483. Give us a call. Tell us what you think. How about this kid, Leclerc? I mean, he proved it in the qualifying, and then today, a great race until he ran out of energy.
Yeah, literally.
Literally.
Yeah. That, you know, you couldn't call it on him. He did everything right.
Oh, no way.
He maintained pace. Even he was turning respectable times, even without the harvest errors that were going on at the end. He was still doing great. Mathematics showed us we were going to see somebody else take the lead.
Who's your driver of the day?
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, you got to get Leclerc. You got to give it to him.
And also, the way he dealt with it too, which was, you know, Ferrari did the right thing as a manager, as it were. They tried to manage his emotions.
By telling him
he's, you know, we're online, just keep it at 38. He knew, he'd worked it out. And that gap between himself and Bottas went from... Hamilton went by, and then the Bottas gap was 32 seconds. We thought we might still be okay, but then in like two laps later, it was like 16 seconds. So yeah, he worked it out in his own head. But Matteo Binotto and the team at Ferrari can be well pleased. They've come to play this year. It's a different year, different era. Vettel made a rare mistake, and again, he's going to be feeling that pressure because nobody else took Vettel out. He was fighting hard with Hamilton, but they didn't touch, as Hamilton pointed out. It's a really different thing. Interestingly enough, Jack Nicholls said before the weekend started, they had a press conference with Ferrari, which hasn't happened in years. Ferrari have been locked down, literally, but now finally they're doing press releases. So there's a whole new atmosphere at Ferrari.
All right, well,
hey, so if you're playing along on the odds and you picked Lewis Hamilton, $7 for five put in.
There you go. All right, we got a caller calling in. We got Cal from Louisiana. Hey, Cal, how's it going?
How's it going?
Pretty good. What'd you think of the race?
Man, wow. That's all I have Wow.
Take a breath.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Before it started, who did you think was going to win?
I was really hoping that Leclerc was going to take it.
Yeah.
And like right now, I'm choked up for him. I really am.
Yeah. Man, that's just a horrible way. And with that kind of that slow death where you could just see it coming behind you, inevitable, no, nothing. There's nothing you can do about it. It was
needed
horrible.
The shark music from yeah. You know.
Yeah, but it wasn't that intent. You knew it was going to happen. It was inevitable.
Absolutely. As soon as I heard him say that there was a problem, I just went, oh, no.
Yeah.
Hey, Cal, how long have you been?
He had such a massive.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just saying he had such a massive lead, and then he just said he had an issue with the car, and it was just devastating.
Mm, yeah. Well, have you been following Formula One a long time?
I've only been following it avidly for 3 or 4 years now, but I started kind of paying attention to it whenever I was very young. One of my family members' husbands is from the UK, and he's the one that introduced me to it when I was about 10 years old. So at the time, I believe it would have been Schumacher that was up in front.
Yeah, and you know his son's coming good. He's in F2 now. Going good.
Yeah. Yeah, he's doing great. I'm really hoping to, I know it's just speculation at this point, but I'm really hoping to see him with Ferrari within the next few years.
It's a good possibility. I mean, he's doing a test, evidently, for Alfa Romeo, and there's a few others testing here in Bahrain. But, Mick Schumacher, the younger version, and he sounds and looks just like Dad.
Yeah, he is testing this week.
I mean, one thing about Mick Schumacher, though, is that, like, I feel there's a lot of pressure on him that shouldn't be there because he is great. But, you know, there's a lot of people that expect him to be his dad, but I really don't think that he should be.
You know, it's interesting.
I think he'll be able to stand on his own.
Yeah, and you know what? I thought the same, and I saw him twice now at Macau. I do the Macau Grand Prix every year, and I was actually quite taken aback because he even has the same manager in Willy Weber and the same PR officer that Michael had. And so they keep him away from a lot of the heavy media or a lot of the heavy attention. But when you actually get through that and you get permission to talk to him, he's surprisingly laid back, unfettered, very proud of his father, very proud of his father's legacy, but not, if you like, intimidated like you might be if you were Jordan's son or Manning's son or, you know what I'm saying, a great athlete, Carl Lewis's son, whatever it might be. He doesn't seem to be over-affected by the fact that he's trying to do the same thing, but doesn't expect, obviously, the expectations are from the outside, not the inside.
Oh, absolutely. It just bothers me a little bit to see pressure from the fans, because I follow Mick Schumacher's page, and then I follow the Keep Fighting Michael Schumacher page, and I just see a lot of people that look like they expect him to be as good as his dad was, and even if he is as good or better, it's because of him. It's not because of his father.
Let me ask you a question quickly about that, because we want to go back to the race, but do you think we'll ever see Michael again, and what are your feelings? I know mine on that.
I'm not entirely sure, because I know that his family wants to keep everything that's going on private, and I respect that. I'd like to see him at least, you know, back out in the world and possibly just saying, you know, hey, I'm okay. But if, you know, if he decides not to do that, if he does get better, or if he is already better and he just hasn't decided to do that, I respect that. And I mean, if not, then it's still a pretty devastating situation. But, you know, I think respecting the family's privacy would be good, because there's also a lot of people that try to pressure them into giving updates, and they've already been very clear that they don't want to do that. So
good. Yeah, I agree. I don't.
Fantastic.
Great memory of Michael. I want to keep it the way it was.
Hey, Cal, what else were you watching in the race today?
I mean, I was keeping an eye on Daniel Ricciardo with his move from Red Bull to Renault, and I don't know, his car shutting down on him like that was a bit hard to deal with, I would imagine.
Oh, God. That was so strange how they both...
Oh, within seconds of each other, yeah.
Hülkenberg looked like an engine failure.
Yeah, they were totally... That sounded like totally different failures. You know, Ricciardo's car just died, and Hülkenberg's car had a pretty loud noise, so who knows? But it was... I mean, they had to be within a minute or less. It was like... seemed like almost identical times, but...
What are you driving,
Cal?
What are you
driving for a living?
I'm a truck driver. I've always been fairly adamant that if I couldn't follow my 7-year-old self dream of being an astronaut, that I wanted to drive. I didn't really care what it was, just whatever opportunity became available. So my grandfather drove a truck for 20 years. I've got family that haul logs for sawmills and paper mills, and now I drive a truck over the road.
Good for you. Hey, watch out for Larry. He's out there somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
All right, Cal. Well, thanks for calling in and thanks for tuning in. And we appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for taking my call.
We'll see you in China.
Travel safe. Hey, and you know, he said something and we get some comments once in a while about, you know, you'll see somebody puts a statement out about the Schumacher situation.
Yeah.
We've promised not to put anything out that didn't come straight from the family and their official resources. So please understand we're doing the same as Cal
there. I mean, that's totally common sense. I can't even imagine trying to do anything but that.
There was a lot of speculation on Twitter when it first happened, and I was really disgusted by some of the bad journalism or speculation that was going on. Motorsport can be very proud that we don't get into this fake media, fake news type scene, and long may it continue. And I think Michael's legacy is a testament to that good journalism that's out there in motorsport.
Hey, in the race today, I mean, how many passes today? It's got to be a huge number. I wish we could figure out.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anybody's got the number, if anybody's a stato out there, or anybody can find it, let me know, because we haven't. But I reckon that's as many passes as I've seen in a Formula One race in the modern era.
You know, that's a strong statement, but I can't argue with that. Yeah, if you know, call us, 512-643-5483.
And between teammates.
Yeah,
teammates. Sorry, I just cut you off. 5483, that was what he was trying to say.
Yeah. Man, but passes and crashes. Okay, so what happened with Vettel when he spun?
Well, basically, two things happened. First of all, Hamilton said he felt the headwind coming at turn four, so he braked later than he normally would. So that gave him the advantage. Vettel then got on the power probably harder and quicker than he normally would because he was trying to stay up with Hamilton and trying to challenge him. And that led to effectively the grunt going down, especially on the left front, left rear. And effectively, he just lost grip in that left rear. That spun him round. He went over the rumble strips, and that unbalanced the front
wing.
Then when he got back going again down the straight, it literally unlodged itself and came underneath him.
Yeah, well some it looks of the, like it vibrated off.
Yeah, some of the other complexity around that was really interesting. So that's around lap 37. At that point, Hamilton had 12 laps on his soft tires, and Vettel had 11. And so just strictly by that stat, you're thinking Ham's getting ready to have his tires go off the cliff and Vettel will pull away. Well, it didn't. But what was interesting is if you really watched the scenario of the DRS zone in that area, Vettel earned the use of DRS in the next zone because of his spacing behind Bottas.
Yeah, I know. That was interesting.
But what was interesting is Bottas went into the pit and left Vettel with clean air and DRS on it.
I know, but if Bottas had really thought about that in terms of trying to help his teammate, which he didn't, he should have actually slowed down in some ways, or at least got out of the way before the straight, because that would have not allowed Vettel to be in that position going into the DRS zone, like you say.
Right. I think, as we saw some of the replays, it looked like Vettel had already taxed his tires, especially through T4 and Hamilton being there. And then he also had dirty air from Hamilton having just made it by. So Vettel really had a lot of odds against him in that portion.
Can I change my vote for driver of the day?
Yeah, I guess so.
Driver of the day, team of the day, McLaren, Lando Norris.
Ooh, yeah.
Lando Norris. That is, I mean, you know.
Seventh.
Look how we were literally slagging off McLaren.
Oh, yeah.
And rightly so.
As
bad as we are Williams now. But McLaren were nowhere. That's why Fernando left. That's why it all went, it was a terrible scene. Zak Brown, the American, trying to fly the flag with Gilles Deferrin and all the rest of them, is turning this thing around. And Lando, 19 he may be, but he's leading the way. But the irony is, Sainz has two power failures already.
Ooh, yeah, that is ironic. You know, and Zak Brown, you saw him early in the year. It was during testing or something. I saw an interview, and he seemed really confident. And I thought, God, how long can he put on that face? Well, he's got a good reason now.
Yep.
How good is Lando Norris? That's what I want to know.
Really good. And I mean, look at the fight he had with Raikkonen. Yeah, he showed no signs of, being overawed. It was the older and the younger. Kimi, the veteran against Lando, and Lando was up for the task.
I know you want to talk about this. Driver standings right now. It's a little different than it would be last year.
Well, yeah, all because of the fastest lap.
Exactly.
Bottas won the race in Australia and got the fastest lap.
Yeah.
Hamilton was second, but now fastest lap this week, and obviously now it's reversed. Hamilton wins, but the fastest lap was Leclerc.
Yeah.
So advantage Bottas.
So Bottas 44 points, Hamilton 43.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's, I wasn't sure what I thought about fastest lap, and it's still way too early for really. I think I like it.
You know,
I think I like it.
You know, in F2, they have 4 points for pole position.
Wow.
I like that.
Yeah, and you know, all across motorsports, you get all kinds of different takes on that, whether it's fastest lap in the race or pole.
But
or,
no fan boost.
Hey, so
no
thank you. Boost. We're Thankfully. All in agreement there. Hey, so, you know, we've been talking about how to assist the back of the grid. So Sanity checked me on this idea. Let's explore the idea of giving top qualifiers in Q3 and Q2 points.
Well, I know we're going to take a break, but I want you to look up a story and we'll all look it up because I think it's a good talking point. They're talking about changing qualifying.
Yes, into groups or so something.
Yeah, let's
like
take
that.
A look at that.
All right. We're going to go ahead and take our first break. Listen to Speed City. We're live in Austin, Texas. Back after these messages.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers. The best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
We spend an average of 8 hours and 41 minutes a day facing screens. Laptops, smartphones, tablets, even digital refrigerators. But what are we really connected to? Isn't it time you connected to something greater? Sometimes the best way to connect is to disconnect. This moment of escape was created by Hagerty. For people who love cars.
Talk 1370.
Hello, I'm Felipe Massa, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
We're live from Austin, Texas, home of the Formula One United States Grand Prix right here at Circuit of the Americas.
And Indy.
Hey, you
and
know,
Indy and MotoGP and all.
MotoGP is next week.
Hey, you know, I was speaking with somebody this week, and they were talking about what's it going to be like being there. It's the first weekend of November. I said, well, it's not just the first weekend of November that makes it exciting. It's Halloween in Austin, Texas.
Oh, that's scary.
A whole nother level.
Yeah. You know that Austin's theme note is keep Austin weird. Well, in Halloween, it goes to another level.
Yeah, it goes to Matthew McConaughey level of weird.
All right.
Bring your own bongos.
Those Lincoln commercials are getting weird and weirder, aren't they?
It's so strange that I'm like, are they doing it on purpose? Do they know?
Yeah, I'm still wondering, just because you can play trick shots in pool, why you would want... Never mind.
But it
seems to work with Matt. Only McConaughey could get away with it.
I just hope he doesn't get confused with start bouncing the Lincoln off the walls.
With McConaughey, all bets are off. You can do whatever you want.
He could trip on the middle of 6th Street and everybody got, God, that's cool.
All right, so we talked about being here in Austin. We just mentioned IndyCar. Was it last week or two weeks ago?
It all melds into one.
Wow. It was last week.
We had IndyCar here and we did a broadcast and all that. But everybody was saying, oh, there's so much more excitement in passing and racing and competition than Formula One. Well, I'm sorry, but this...
Back at you.
This was just as good in a different way.
It was, yeah.
It really was.
Yeah. Really good stuff.
And it continued, and I don't think I even told you guys. Monday night, I get a call from somebody over at the Domain and said, have somebody that wants to talk to you. Like, what? You know, Domain's a big shopping center, beautiful place here. And Santino Ferrucci's on the phone. Hey, man, I'm hanging out. Come hang out. I've got another day or so here.
He didn't call you when he was driving, did he?
No, he did not.
Is he still wearing his overalls?
He ought to grab that by the horns and do a marketing campaign for somebody's hands-free Bluetooth device.
Yeah, he should, actually. That would be good.
All right, well, we went to break. She said we're going to talk about the new potential qualifying, the new four-part.
Yeah.
And I know we're just all kind of getting up to speed on this, but...
Well, it's really interesting. And, you know, my thoughts are around that. Go back to the point of rewarding the folks that are at the back back of the grid. How do we get them some points, keep them engaged, potentially give them a better opportunity to compete, get better prize money for the season? So I like the idea of addressing that in some manner as well.
Yeah, the only thing is that unfortunately then you would get literally two different races, i.e. you would get people racing for the other points or racing for the lesser points. And then I think you take the essence of a race out because it would become two.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it should ever equate to or even half of what the race points would be.
Okay.
But what if you, like the fastest lap, okay, you got first place, you know, you were the fastest in Q4, then you get 3 points and you're second or first, whatever. And so the idea is, you know, yes, they're already really doing it, but this gives them potentially some financial incentive.
Well, let's get, I want people to call in on this at 512-643-5483. The format would mean four cars are eliminated after Q1, then Q2 and Q3, leaving eight to contest for Q4.
Yeah.
Now, my love is the IndyCar format. I love the two groups, best six go through, fast 12, fast six.
Mm-hmm.
It's really simple to understand. It really, it does.
And then even the names.
Sort them out.
Even the name of the quad, you know, fast 12, fast six.
It works. And so I'm all for something similar. And that's what this sounds
right.
like.
Yeah. All right, we got a caller. Ah, it's Andy P from just outside Chicago.
He's going to be happily wearing that McLaren.
Yeah, hat. Man. How about your Lando Norris?
Very impressive.
Yeah.
Very impressive. I am slowly getting my McLaren excitement back.
I'm glad to have it.
I could tell that it matters to me again, because when Sainz got the damage on lap two, it hurt, and it genuinely hurt, because man, what could have been.
Yeah.
But
Andy, why McLaren? What's your thing?
I got into it the 1998 season, the Hakkinen Schumacher rivalry.
Yep.
And I always liked the fact that McLaren let their drivers race.
Yeah, true.
Versus Ferrari, who would issue team orders. So when that rivalry was at its peak and those two guys were going at it weekend after weekend, that's kind of how I kind of fell in love with that team. And I've always just loved the attitude.
And so this last few years have been so since you've been out in the woods and crying for the last 6 years, this hasn't been easy, right?
No, it's been a struggle. And, you know, you look for positives anywhere you can. And the energy this year seems so different, and I noticed it even just in testing. But and they're on the way. They're not there, but they are on the way. And I'm actually very confident in Zach Brown. He's bringing in some really good people. James Key is now part of the team, which is a very impressive thing.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because James Key, as they say in England, has come off gardening leave and is back with the team this week, literally this weekend. And he is a big factor here, because he is a designer and, he's one of those boffins. He's another Newey, or at least in the same vein as you expect him to deliver. And he's had some experience in other teams. But I wouldn't say he's a savior, but he's another step, like you say, that Zach is taking to right the ship.
Right. Also, just wanted to call, and I didn't get a chance to do it last week, obviously, with the IndyCar stuff, but thanks for everything on the PA last week. You guys put on one heck of a show. The track looked great. Great show all the way around.
Pass it on to Bobby.
There you go. Thanks, buddy. Hey, I have a question, though. Let's go back to McLaren for a moment. Zach Brown is still beating his drum on the back grid and how to compensate him. And that basically, even these rules that they're talking about in the next year may not be enough for McLaren to stay on the grid. What do you make of that? Do you think that's posturing? Do you think they would really pull the plug and head out?
No.
I think it's half posturing, but with the trump card of there's an IndyCar drive sitting waiting to go if they need it.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Now, while I've got you, talking McLaren, now you'll obviously, if you really are a true Orange fan, be looking towards the 500 and Fernando. They've hooked up with Carlin. It's still a one-man team, but they're going to exchange data, which means Pato O'Ward will be involved, and obviously the Charlie Kimball and Max Chilton. What do you think? Should McLaren enter two cars, or what do you think the future is there?
I'd say go for it.
I say bring Hartley in.
Yeah.
That would be wonderful. That would be.
Well, he's a Kiwi.
Hartley lineup. Oh my gosh.
Well, he's a proper Kiwi.
Right.
Oh man.
That would be good. Yeah, Kiwi T. Remember?
Yeah.
Don't forget that
Kiwi Indy.
That'll be good. So, what about this season, though, Andy? I mean, are we looking, I mean, I keep saying it, but I know it's only round two, but are we looking at a much more exciting season because it's just not Mercedes, Mercedes, Mercedes?
I think so. Ferrari have definitely come to fight. It was really nice to see them on form. And I'll take a little bit of levity and say, you know, hey, I think it was good that the engine broke a little bit because it shows that those top sixes, top six cars are still ran by human beings and they can fail.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah.
The thing that we don't have to worry about it being 1, 2, 3, 4 every single week.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, so not only Lando Norris got some points today, but Albon got his first points in a Formula One, too.
So, the rookies are doing good.
Thanks for calling, Andy. We appreciate it, buddy, and thanks for listening.
All right, you guys have a good one.
Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, talk about both sides of the garage, the highs and lows. I mean, Carlos Sainz, that's his second failure. Remember, this is the guy that has come from a reliable Renault. He's now still in a Renault or in a Renault engine, but he's had two failures in two races. And both the Renault factory guys went out. So either they're right on the ragged edge at the moment trying to push things forward, our Renault, we're Red Bull right after all this time.
it is so fun that it's that all these little sub-stories are like that. It's
and
awesome.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, just tune into the Netflix. Because that has it all. It's a great behind-the-scenes battle between
I've
Renault.
I've had so many people that know that I'm into Formula One that are not, that have now gone, oh my gosh, this is so great. They love that series.
Well, I'm really enjoying the soccer ones, the American football ones, and now the Netflix Formula One ones. Hard Knocks, what's the other one? Against All Odds. Fantastic stuff, because you don't have to be a fan of the sport to really, it's the human interest. That's what real sport is. It's and like Andy just said, you know, when you see a failure like that, you realize that it's not just a mechanical thing, you know, something, there is a human error in design or pushing it too far or strategy or whatever. There is an element, and then that is where Formula One comes to a reality. Yes, it's a very mechanized and technological NASA, at 180 miles an hour type thing, but it can be human error or choosing to use the machinery unwisely.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to read down for Cal and others that are stuck behind the wheel driving right now, just the final classification. So it was Hamilton, Bottas, Leclerc, Verstappen, Vettel, Lando Norris, Kimi Raikkonen, Pierre Gasly, Alexander Albon, Perez, Giovinazzi, Kvyat, Magnussen, Stroll, Russell, Kubica, and those that did not finish, Hülkenberg and Ricciardo at the same time. They didn't finish. Carlos Sainz and Roman Grosjean out. So, but look, Mick, look at that. I mean, we got Albon in the points, Lando Norris, Giovinazzi at, where was Raikkonen? There he was at 7th. So Alfa Romeo, I mean, that's
yeah, I'd say that's a really good result for Raikkonen. I mean, really. I mean, you know, McLaren, Alfa Romeo topped in the points.
Right. It's been a while since we saw that combination up like that.
I still want to know, and if anybody's got a call in, please, 512-643-5483. What happened to Magnussen?
I know. I saw nothing. There was so much going on. You know, normally me, during the race, if Haas is having a problem, I know exactly what happened.
K-Mag.
I couldn't even keep my notes because it was going so much going on.
He was running in 6th. Next I looked at it, he was in 13th, and now he's a lap down.
Yeah, what exactly happened? All right, I'm not going to try to look while I'm on the air. But so, all right, guys, what else during the race? I mean, there was so much happening. Jonathan, you were previously taking notes. What were some of your favorite things that you were writing down?
Well, I took a big note that on lap 37, Hamilton and Vettel, I think that was some of the best overtaking I've seen between those two. Clean, fair fighting. And if that continues, I'd love to see it happen. Just a lap later, of course, that's when Vettel spun. But imagine if that had continued all the way through to the 50th lap or 57th lap. But that Hamilton-Vettel battle on lap 37, for me, outstanding. That's some of the best Formula One racing I've seen in a long time.
All right, guys. Well, let's go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we got a caller on the line. We'll take his call, and we're going to continue the Bahrain discussion from Formula One today. Listen to Speed City live in Austin, back after these messages.
When we see a beautiful car pass by, we always seem to use a hand signal. The classic thumbs up, the point and shoot six-gun finger, the hang loose thumb and pinky combo. If you've ever flashed one of those, now there's a car club for you. Introducing the Hagerty Drivers Club, with exclusive members-only events, insight on buying and selling, the Hagerty Magazine, and roadside service. The Hagerty Drivers Club gives you a big thumbs up. So keep flashing those fingers.
Same to you!
Just not that one. Join the Hagerty Drivers Club at Hagerty.com today.
Hey, beer people, it's Christine Sellers.
And I'm Daytona.
Sellers Brewery is back in Austin and brewing again.
Oh, Sellers doesn't ring a bell for some of you?
Well, for the last 17 years, we've been crafting the perfect comeback. We've returned to our roots with Sellers White, a famous local favorite.
Plus, we're creating some fresh new brews.
And whether it's the first time you've tasted our family's legendary beer,
or the millionth,
we're thrilled to be back.
Swing by your local store, watering hole, or our brewery, and let's catch up over beers.
Sellers, Austin's original craft brewery.
Talk 1370.
Jenny Gow from BBC F1. You are listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to the show. I want to talk a little bit about our sponsor. We have a new sponsor in Formula One, a new sponsor of Speed City right here, and it is Himalaya, and their website is Drive Himalaya. And what these guys do is they take the Land Rover Defender 90s and Defender 110s.
Oh yeah.
That, you know, those things were originally designed as to be an incredible off-road vehicle, which they are. But if you've ever driven one on the street, one of those classics, they're not that exciting to drive on the street.
And I've been many a farm in England. That's what the farmers use. You know, you use your tractors to pull things, you use the Land Rover to get around.
That's what it says exactly on their website. It says it was a humble beginnings to get around on the farm.
And it was a basic thing.
But they're cool as you know what looking, you know. And so they've always been a really cool vehicle till you drive them and go, yeah, okay, there's a compromise.
But I've seen people do individual mods that are cool.
Well, these guys take that compromise away and totally and completely turn these into a vehicle that are just amazing. I mean, and there's a few people doing vehicles like this, and this is not an inexpensive vehicle, but it is literally every nut and bolt, and it is down to the F1 level of detail that they do this. And that's not exaggeration. You know F1, and it's insane levels of engineering. Well, that's what these guys do with these vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
We're not talking about a big production line. We're talking about bespoke here, aren't
exactly.
We?
Like the finest. About 10 of the fully custom vehicles a year, give or take.
And I presume you have input into your vehicle?
Yeah, absolutely. You can choose your drivetrain, for example. Like,
wow.
Typically, they're using the LS General Motors, LS-based motors, like the Corvette-based type motors, which there's a good reason they do that. And there's a good reason that everybody uses those because they're the most powerful, most, you know...
Really efficient.
Super refined and efficient.
Reliable.
And did I say powerful?
Dead on.
You know, that's there are no compromise way to get power.
And it all fits into the chassis?
Yep. And it is really, you got to check them out. DriveHimalaya.com. We're going to have some more discussions about these. We're going to get to drive one of these bad boys. It's going to be here in Austin.
Hey, check it out around the track here. It'll be out there.
There you go. All right, let's, we got a caller on the line. We got Larry. Larry from Pennsylvania. Hey, how's it going, Larry?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Was one heck of a race, I must confess, and a lot of drama in the qualifying, and F1 is better than I ever remember it being.
That's what Jonathan said.
It really is true. This harkens back to the days of the 50s when it was wide open and all the great marks were putting their best automobiles out there. The uncertainty every time the green flag falls, it's not like, okay, here's your 1, 2, and 3, and 4, and then what's the rest of the field going to do? If Ferrari continues this surge, and which I believe they will with the engineering assets that they have, it's going to be one of those seasons when the checkered, when the green flag flies, you have absolutely no idea what's going to transpire, which is how racing is always at its best.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to be philosophical on you, but that's really what we're looking at.
That's what everybody
does. And that's exactly what we want. And you know, just in that breath alone, Red Bull are going to be there, McLaren, it seems, are going to be there, and Renault are going to be there soon. And Haas are teetering on the edge of being there. So, you know, we've got those two teams that are dominating, but boy, there's so many others that are coming.
Yeah, there is. If I could ask a brief question and apologize if you covered it in the pre-race show because I wasn't able to listen.
Oh, Larry.
I know it. There's something called sleep. I have to get
it
every now and again.
Are
they going to appeal Grosjean's point on his super license, or is it appealable?
You know, that's a good question. They put it on his license, and I said, I guess in the court of appeal, I guess he should have, as far as I read the rules, a chance to appeal that. But for now, it is definitely on his license for sure, and obviously got the grid penalty. Gunter Steiner was quite outspoken about it. I was reading on the net saying it was really unfair. I'm dubious about it. about it. It was a dangerous place to be. It wasn't good. He should know better. It was qualifying. Come on. And more importantly, why aren't Haas telling him who's behind him?
Yeah, that was my thought. Yeah. Is this the immaturity of Haas? Because the guy that I used to jerk wrenches for when I was working on race cars, he wouldn't use pros. He didn't make it in Cup because he wouldn't use, and I think one of the big reasons was he wouldn't use professionals. And I'm wondering if Haas needs to hire some experienced strategic guys as spotters like they do in Cup so that these kind of things don't happen. And I also think a lot of it, well, there's two things I thought that drove it beyond that was Grosjean's reputation drove a lot of it. And then the other thing that drove it is the new race director also, even though it's a steward's decision, he's asserting himself, I will not be pushed around, and then maybe he thinks he can slack off later. I wondered about your thoughts.
Yeah, that's interesting. Mike Massey is the guy you're talking about, and you're right. He has to make his way and has to make his name felt, I guess, suppose. And in fact, more decisions, certainly in the race, incident-wise, were forgiven, if you will. And that was something that both the commentators at Sky picked up on, was that the stewards and the race director are letting more incidents, let them race, was what was said in the driver's briefing. I still feel that Grosjean, and maybe you're right, because it's Grosjean, was dealt with kind of toughly with that decision, because he didn't mean to impede Norris. He just, in fact, you saw him react. He almost spun the car trying to get out of the way because he found himself in the wrong place. I think it was a lapse of concentration, and like I said, more importantly, I agree with you. I think Haas, to answer your original question, Günther Steiner was around in the Jaguar days, so he should know better. But of course, he can't do all the calls. And I do agree with you that American racing has a much better delivery system to the drivers for things like spotter things, which NASCAR, of course, and now Indy implement, especially in oval racing. It's not something that Formula One has been both good at and, you know, assiduous with in terms of, you know, actually putting it into implementation. And I hope, like you say, that there is more of that because it needs to be there. I want to do away with mirrors for a start. I want to actually have a digital mirror on the halo. That's what I want. So everybody can see, just like they do in WEC, that, you know, there is someone approaching and it goes from, you know, green to orange to red.
No, this seems like such a simple problem, one way or the other. You know, there's got to be a simple fix to that. And I don't know. I don't know why they wouldn't do one or the other.
Good point, though, Larry. Good point.
Hey, what else were you watching or listening to during the race today, Larry?
Well, Gasly's in serious trouble.
Yep.
I mean, he's not qualified by Toro Rosso. How quickly is he going to be demoted?
Well, you missed the pre-show because Les said he should be fired.
All right. I have no personal grievance, but the F1 culture of, reward for performance and, you know, is so strong. I agree with you, Larry.
It's interesting you say that, though. I mean, he was eighth today. He scored points for Toro Rosso 2 years ago. If Toro Rosso had scored a point, that have closed the town and got the mayor and given him a ribbon.
Yeah, but I mean, when the Red Bull drivers out-qualified by Toro Rosso, and that was the team they plucked him from as a training team, an entry team, that he's being out-qualified by them, then he needs to be demoted, just like he got promoted. And the other thing that really struck me, and I'm heartbroken over, is the timing of Alonso and the timing of Hamilton. Hamilton has the best timing. He knew when to leave McLaren for Mercedes, and Alonso doesn't know when to stay.
Well, and also, there was a lot of talk in the press about Alonso and Ferrari's relationship, and that was quite touchy. Evidently, Alonso kind of rules the team when he's whatever team he's in, and that's true of McLaren, it's true of Ferrari, and it was probably true in the later time, his second time with McLaren too. But you're absolutely right. Schumacher was a genius at it. Alain Prost was a genius at it. Just picking the right team at the right time to be there when it starts winning. I mean, look at Schumacher with Mercedes. Ferrari. They hadn't won at all, and then they never stopped winning. And likewise with Hamilton and Mercedes when he joined them from McLaren. It is a timing thing. Just going back to your last thing, though, who would you put in the Red Bull?
That's always a problem.
That, you know? I don't know. I really don't know who they would put in the Red Bull, because I'm just not that familiar with the guys from Toro Rosso. I would like to see Kimi, but he's not under their contract. But I really wouldn't know if they would try to, you know, just ship Gasly off to wherever and bring somebody up from the lower ranks into Toro Rosso, you know, to promote one of the Toro Rosso guys up. I think maybe That's the only thing that might be saving Gasly, is they really don't have anyone in the wings. And face it, Helmut Marko is one heck of a taskmaster. You're a better performer. You're here, so you'll pull the plug on you quick.
Well,
there's not a lot of forgiveness in the gentleman.
No, there isn't.
And it
makes you wonder what Hartley's done wrong, given that he's out there and was connected. He's now connected to Ferrari. But in terms of the Red Bull Juniors, look out for Dan Ticktum. He's got a test. He's been coming up through Formula 3. He's quick. He's been with Red Bull for a while. Look out for Lucas Auer, the Austrian, who's now racing in Japan. He's a Red Bull man. And the latest to join the Red Bull family is a young Kiwi called Liam Lawson. He just won the Toyota Racing Series down in New Zealand that I was at. So there are some guys coming through. You know what my answer was, Larry? Why not bring Ocon back? What did he do wrong?
Well, Ocon is under contract to Mercedes.
I know.
They don't have access to him.
I know, but isn't that just the daylight robbery? I mean, the guy's so talented. He could do a better job, I think, than Gasly. But I still think, I can't believe we're talking about this. It's only race two.
Yeah.
I understand that, but Gasly is just not getting it done, and his reputation is better than that.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at what Lando Norris is doing, look at the impact that he is making, these youngsters, when they get their shot. Look at Leclerc. What a heartbreak, although it's going to make him a better driver in the future. To understand that the maturity he showed in the debacle that was saved by the safety car to at least keep the podium, and he's showing a maturity level I don't think that Vettel ever had, and him spinning out shows his maturity level. And I was thinking to myself, it was that the thunder was stolen by a caller, and it's his to steal, is that how soon is it going to be Schumacher Leclerc? Then it's going to be Vettel Leclerc.
I love what you're thinking. I'll throw another one in there. He's not connected, I don't think. Yes, he is a reserve driver. I can't remember what he's for. Sergio Sete Câmara. He's in F2 at the moment. He's been around. He won Macau. He's awesome. And I just, keep an eye out for him. He could be coming.
Sete Câmara.
Set the camera on your table.
Larry. Yeah, but he doesn't have the Schumacher name.
Ask Dan Ticktum how about that goes. Yeah.
Interesting.
All right, well, Larry, thanks for calling in, buddy, and thanks for listening. And, of course, we will talk to you soon.
Okay, and I hope you'll forgive me for missing the pre-race.
You're okay.
All right, thanks, buddy.
Take care.
Hey, I was just looking at a tweet that Guido Vandergaard tweeted, and he said, pure class from Lewis Hamilton apologizing about overtaking Leclerc, and in the tweet is a GIF, and it's Hamilton passing Leclerc with a little hand wave. I missed that.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, a little hand wave, basically saying, sorry, buddy, and this happens in sport. All right, we got to take a break and listen to Speed City. We're live in Austin, Texas, and we'll be back right after these messages.
Hey, beer people, it's Christine Sellis.
And I'm Daytona.
Sellis Brewery is back in Austin and brewing again.
Oh, Sellis doesn't ring a bell for some of you?
Well, for the last 17 years, we've been crafting the perfect comeback. We've returned to our roots with Sellis White, a famous local favorite.
Plus, we're creating some fresh new brews.
And whether it's the first time you've tasted our family's legendary beer,
or the millionth,
we're thrilled to be back.
Swing by your local store, watering hole, or our brewery, and let's catch up over beers.
Sellis, Austin's original craft brewery.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers. The best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride. Or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Talk 1370.
Hi, this is Mario Andretti, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Speaking of Mario Andretti, I'm reading a tweet literally right when he said that. It said, cruel luck for Charles Leclerc, but Ferrari showed things to come. The season is young. Hashtag RNJP.
It's a good point. May 11th, his documentary coming out.
Yeah, Mario's, yeah.
Last weekend, I saw him in engaging with so many people again. And we've told this story so many times, and it's so cool to see him take time, shake hands, meet people, get pictures.
Here in Austin.
At the Indy race here. And then he cruised around out front on a scooter and was sitting next to the kart track out in front.
Yeah, I saw a photo you had.
I was like, okay, now that's pretty cool. Let's see if he'll get out there.
Well, it's official. The driver of the day is Charles Leclerc.
No surprise. And just go to the Instructors Championship. But I'll tell you what, there was so much going on. Sometimes you needed to take a step back. What is interesting, Mercedes are already off to the Constructors. 44 points to Ferrari's 22. They've got twice as many points. But then, how about this? Haas, Ferrari in fourth position, just behind Red Bull.
Ah, yeah, there you go.
2 points ahead of Renault, which is significant. And like I said, I'm watching Haas versus Alfa Romeo for obvious reasons. Both got the same powertrain. And to a certain extent, they've probably got similar budget.
Gosh, speaking of Haas, you know, their rivalry with Renault. What the heck? How could Renault's cars both go out at the same time like that?
Yeah.
Cyril Atterbom.
Obviously different things.
Nuts.
But yeah. Oh, yeah. It was. It was something
that
else.
That was reminiscent of Australia 2018 for
the
Haas.
The wheels falling off.
With the wheels falling off. But,
oh, don't stop me.
I mean, not nearly as bad, but yeah. But still, right at the same time. Here's a quote from Rosberg, by the way. He says, if you could name one area where McLaren has made the most progress, he says, drivers.
Interesting.
Yeah.
He might be a little biased on that.
I do love the class of Lewis Hamilton. Not only was he waving as he went by, but you heard him on the interviews. He was mentioning Leclerc. And I mean,
I think Leclerc's a good guy.
Yeah.
I think he is. I like his presentation skills.
And we were watching right at the beginning, and he just looks so calm, relaxed,
For a guy with the world, honestly, that's been the downfall of many a great Ferrari driver, is the sheer pressure of an entire country. If you think America is sport crazy and puts pressure on their sporting heroes to succeed and win, well, you ain't seen anything until you've been to Italy. They are so passionate. I mean, every restaurant, every bar is talking about these two drivers all year long.
What about the, I've heard talk of like the new Ferrari, the kind of the new atmosphere.
Yes.
Because Arrivabene was just this drill sergeant.
He's Arrivederci.
Yeah, he is Arrivederci. But he was this drill sergeant. And
he was.
It's not the same in that garage.
Yeah, and that goes, when I was in the British Grand Prix in July, the one people you don't get to talk to is Ferrari. I actually turned around to one of, I think it was Will, and I said, well, where is Ferrari's sort of meet and greet or stroke huddle? And he goes, they don't do one. Okay. I said, what do you mean? He goes, they don't talk to the press. And I'm like, whoa.
And
so
remember,
they
and Mercedes skipped the Netflix participation.
Yes,
also.
They did. Yep.
So,
yeah.
You didn't miss it too bad. I didn't, in fact, I didn't even think about it. I guess it was second episode, and I thought, wait a minute, they're not much, but they didn't intentionally.
Well, they've opened up the doors. I saw Binotto on Matteo Binotto, who's the new boss of Ferrari. He seems to be much more open, much more transparent, and he was even on the Sky show or ESPN show at the end of the race today. So he's much more of a Toto Wolff figure, and Toto, of course, Christian Horner the same, are available to be talking to each other and talking to the media. And it's important to the sport. I mean, you cannot.
Yeah, you can't.
Whether you like journalists or you don't like journalists or you don't like the fans, you can't. This is their sport, not yours.
It kind of reminds me of what Formula One, after Bernie, when Bernie was there, when they were like, no social media, no nothing. They were so locked down as a sport. It's like Ferrari has kind of held on to that a little bit, but now it sounds like that's changing.
Speaking of Ferrari, one of their sponsors you're seeing much more prominently ever is Mission Minnow.
Yeah, what is that?
And that was really curious because I didn't know if, I had no idea what this was. So I dig into it. It's really interesting. There's actually some controversy going on around it. Mission Minnow is the name of a consulting firm dealing with operational efficiency, process improvement, etc. All sounds great, doesn't it?
Sounds like corporate speak to me.
Yeah. It's all great. Making your life better, technology, everything's going to work smoother. What could be wrong with that?
What's wrong with a piece of paper?
the issue is Mission Minnow is run by Philip Morris.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's where people just have this disdain for a company that is known as a tobacco company being involved in this. But they are involved with Ducati. They're involved with Ferrari. There are others.
And McLaren have BAT. Yeah. British American Tobacco are involved now they don't advertise they're going down a different route. They're advertising the vaping, or they're talking about a lifestyle of getting away from it. Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of money still poured into tobacco. I'm glad they banned it. It's correct. We do not want to encourage children to go down that route, but unfortunately it's also backfired because now everybody everybody smoking vape. And they're putting the money into encouraging that.
So. Well, the interesting thing is they've kind of, Philip Morris has kind of put it at almost an arm's distance because they are a client of their own company now.
Yeah. It's just a sneaky backdoor way for them to bring tobacco money back into the
state. It is. We'll see what they do with it. I'm really curious about that. You know, in the United States here, alcohol is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not in the Bible Belt, you can buy it on Sunday, you know. And so I really find it interesting how one seems to be okay, one's not. But around this, just the way they're handling Mission Minnow and getting it in there. So process improvement at its best.
Well, you keep us informed on that.
Didn't break the rules. It's how you use them.
Well, that's motor racing.
Hey, Jonathan and I, we were looking at the bio of Gene Haas.
Yes.
And I've still got it up unless you got it, but I've got it here. It's really fascinating, his history. I mean, he's born in 1952. He's from Youngstown, Ohio, but he's obviously the founder of the Formula One team, Haas F1. And the reason that they said they did was they moved into Formula One is to make their brand more global. They dominate here in the United States in the CNC industry, the machines that do that type of manufacturing. So that's how he got into this. But he graduated high school in 1970, and then he graduated in 1975 with a Bachelor of Science degree at California State University at Northridge. But after working 3 years as a programmer, he founded Haas Proton Engineering. So he started as an entrepreneur 3 years out of college. So he worked for an engineering firm, and then he started Haas Proton Engineering. They were a contract machine shop. And so essentially he's been doing the same thing since 1978, but now to the Formula One a level of detail in the CNC world.
Yeah. And I want over these next few weeks to go into, you know, to dig down a little bit deeper into Haas and who they are. And you're right. Gene Haas is a phenomenal figure, not just as an entrepreneur, but also in racing. I mean, you know, what he's achieved in NASCAR alone is incredible. And actually you put him in the same group as Ganassi and Penske. Penske's racing all over the world now, in Indy, in Australia, in sports cars.
Andretti too.
Yeah, Andretti doing the same, and so too Ganassi, but so too Haas. So, you know, that's high rarefied air now, that those four guys or those four teams are doing what they're doing. And I really do take up my hat off to Gene Haas, because there couldn't be any more different motorsports than NASCAR and Formula One, but he is achieving in both, and everybody said he couldn't do it.
I'm going to finish this story because it's really fascinating. It leads right up to Formula One. I know we just got a minute or two left, but he in 1983 he introduced one of the 5C machines, he called it, and that's when Haas Automation was born, 1983. Mm-hmm. And they started in a little 5,000 square foot facility, but in 1987 Haas took what he learned from his 5C, what the other one was, and developed his first vertical machining center, the VF1. Mm-hmm. Sound familiar?
Yep.
And that's the name of the car. So if you just a little background on Haas and the car and the company.
All right, full circle to our hours worth of time here, because in the pre-show we said we argued a little bit about Haas getting all their parts from Ferrari. Well, bit by bit, Haas has been machining F1 parts, not only for themselves but for other teams too. So,
well, that's not fair. There's got to be something wrong with that.
Fox,
we can't
in the
have
hen
that
house.
But no, but I mean, it does go full circle to the constructors' argument. Yes, they started off with a lift up from Ferrari. They've learned their way. They've taken those Ferrari parts. They are the junior team for Ferrari. They are called Haas Ferrari, and they are looking at the parts they're getting and now machining their own parts. And eventually, you will see a Haas car that is their own car. Sure, they can have the Ferrari plant, but I'll bet you it'll have less and less, and it'll go the other way around. They'll start machining parts for Ferrari and other teams.
And they probably are right now.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I mean, they seriously.
Put that one in your pipe, Larry.
Yeah, because they've got they've got fantastic technical capabilities. And you know they're doing, you know, it's funny how those things like that happen. Like McLaren, who supplies all the ECUs, not just for Formula One, though.
Formula E.
And IndyCar.
Yep.
And other motorsports, I'm sure. So, all right,
we're
guys.
We're going to see more of that. We're going to absolutely see more of that.
Yeah. Man, what a fantastic race today, man. This is so much fun when you have a race like today, man.
How long we got left? Because I want to know why the American flag is backwards on the Haas.
It's the same reason
that it's backwards on the military different sleeves. Shoulders of a military, because it's supposed to be flowing with the wind no matter which way it's facing. So if it's on one side of the car, then it's in other words, the stars are always going to be to the front because that's where the pole would be.
Gotcha.
So there you go. How's that for a bit of trivia?
There you go.
All right. Well, we are about out of time. Thank you for tuning in today. If you want to find out more about us and see lots more of our content, go to speedcitybroadcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and a little bit of Instagram. We do the first two pretty good. And we have a lot of...
You looked at me then.
We have a lot of content up on SoundCloud, and we're dabbling in YouTube.
Yeah, listen to our podcast about Alfa Romeo.
There you go. Tyson. Yeah. All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week.
Happy trails.
Oh, y'all.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.